Well, happy 4th of July, everyone. You know, the story is told of a Texan and a Brit having a conversation one day together. And it was in the fall of the year and Thanksgiving was coming. And the Texan is just going on and on and on about how excited he was for Thanksgiving and what a big deal it is with their family and all the food that they're going to eat. And man, he just can't wait. And then it dawned on him. He looked at the Brit and he said, you all don't have Thanksgiving, right? And the Brit said, oh, no, we do. We just had it. It's July 4th. Think on it. It is a day of freedom to celebrate not only freedoms that we have in our country, but as Sharissa mentioned, the freedoms, the tremendous freedom that we have in Christ. And, you know, there may be a long list of things that we are dissatisfied with or disgruntled about in living in our country. But I'll tell you what, that list gets a whole lot shorter when you go spend time in a third world country somewhere. It's just amazing. You come back and you go, wow, there are no perfect places, but this is a land of blessing and freedom and prosperity for which we can all be incredibly thankful. And thanks be to God for all those who have given so much through the years to preserve our freedoms. We are blessed. 3 years ago, MIT prof Dr. Sherry Turkle told the following story in a New York Times interview. She said, years ago, I spoke with a 16-year-old girl who was considering the idea of having a computer companion in the future. And she described the upside to me. It's not that the robot she'd imagined, which was a vastly more sophisticated Siri, it's not that that robot was so inspiring, it's that she'd already found people to be so disappointing. And now, for the first time, she explained to me, people have options. Back then, I thought her comments seemed a little silly, but now I find them timely. There are people who have tried to make friends but stumbled so badly that they've given up. So when they hear this idea of robots as companions, well, it's not like a robot has the mind to walk away or leave you or do anything like that. And Turkle admits that robots may not break your heart, but they are also incapable of real love. She says, these robots can perform empathy in a conversation about your friend, your mother, your child, but they have no experience of any of these relationships. Machines have not known the arc of human life. They feel nothing of the human loss or love we describe to them. Teresa and I spent this past week at Royal Family Kids Camp. We did a day camp format this year. It just seemed a little bit too soon in our recovery from the pandemic that is still happening to go just full-fledged camp and be overnight and sleeping in cabins together. So we did day camp every day from about 7:30 till about 4 or 4:30. Sharissa and I are the aunt and uncle. We teach Bible all week, and we love on boys and girls ages 7 to 12. It is really easy, and it is really painful. Really painful. Most of the kids at camp are in foster care, and they're coming from places that are really hard, really painful in their young lives. Many of them have experienced more physical and emotional pain and suffering than any human being should have to experience. For the past couple of weeks, Psalm 139 has been on my mind and been thinking that it might be good for us to spend a few Sundays in that very powerful and yet intimate expression of the psalm and the psalmist's relationship to God. And that was confirmed for me at camp this week as we taught Bible to the older kids. In this Olympic year, our theme was Team Jesus. And that Jesus wants you on his team. And he invites children. He invites everyone to be on his team. And the amazing truth is that he wants them on his team. And that being on his team is not about being talented or smart or attractive or popular. All those things that are so important to kids that age and we adults as well. No. It's about being loved. And he invites them because he loves them and wants to make possible for them the life with God for which they were created. And one of the truths about the kids in the foster system that absolutely tears my heart out every year, so much so that I have moments, and I've told you this before, where I think, God, can I not go this summer? And so far, he has not said yes. But every year, you're confronted with the fact that the greatest desire for these kids, the hope that they have more than anything else, is that sometime soon they would have a permanent home. We call it their forever home, that royal family. You see, in the foster system, there are people who are known as respite care providers. They are folks who open their homes to foster children so that the foster parents can have a break. Sharice and I picked up three little brothers every morning and took them to camp. And they were two places removed from their foster parents. The folks that they were with were respite caregivers to the boys' normal respite caregivers because that caregiver needed a break. And they were still living in a foster care system that was not their original family. Imagine being one of those kids who never knows when things are going to change. One boy had been in 23 different homes in 3 to 4 years. 23. First day of camp, I was talking to two kids and asked them if they would mind telling me about their living situations. Who do you live with? Do you have brothers and sisters? Right away, their faces lit up. It was so cute. And they spoke the words that every foster kid longs to speak. We've been adopted. I said, you found your forever home. They said, yes. Now, here's the thing. You and I both know that their forever home is not going to be a perfect place because it's made up of imperfect people. There will still be times of sadness and disappointment and hurt. But even so, the big difference is they will have a sense of belonging and permanence that they have not had in the foster care system. And I think because that is true, one of the greatest challenges that foster care kids face is that of intimacy. Trusting someone enough to let their guard down and open up their heart. It is so hard for them to get close to people because they know that the place where they are living is not permanent. How do you open your heart to those in a situation when there's a very good chance that you will soon be packing your meager belongings in a trash bag and moving somewhere else again? Did I mention that the ministry tears my heart out? Oh God, please don't tell me that I have to go again next year. Probably comes as no surprise to you that I thought a whole lot about our relationship with God and the marvelous truth that we spoke about and learned from Romans 8 that he has adopted as his children those who put their faith in Jesus. Wow, you want to talk about a permanent living situation. You know, a place where one belongs, a place from where we never have to leave, in a place where there can be unimaginable intimacy. Enter Psalm 139. Falls into the category of a wisdom psalm written by David. We don't know why David wrote it. We don't know about an occasion, an event, or any specific reason. We can find no clues, but it is a psalm that is filled with amazement that God knows us so intimately. So intimately that he loves and cares for us so completely, and that perhaps the greatest gift that he gives to us is to allow us to know him, to know God, and to be known by God. That is Psalm 139. Did you know that scientists tell us that it would take 500 billion years, that's billion with a B, billion years to journey around the perimeter of the universe? What? That's what they say. I personally haven't measured it. And that's traveling at the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. It would take 500 billion years to journey around the perimeter of the universe. The sun, you know, just that little glowing ball in the sky, it has a diameter of 864,000 miles. I mean, these are numbers I can't even get my head around. One of the largest stars has a diameter of 100 million miles. It takes sunlight about 8.5 minutes to reach the Earth, yet that same sunlight would take more than 4 years to reach the nearest star, Alpha Centauri, about 24 million miles from the Earth. Somebody needs to say, wow. Yeah. My goodness. And the Milky Way galaxy contains hundreds of billions of stars, and astronomers estimate that there are billions of galaxies. And here we are on this little tiny speck of cosmic dust, important to the Creator. David did not know any of those figures, but he knew and he believed that God was responsible for everything that he could see, things far bigger than he was, and yet David was convinced that this same God was intimately involved in the details of his life. Go figure. How do you put those things together? And it's true. Sisters and brothers, the infinite God who spoke this mega universe of ours into existence knows each of the 7+ billion people on the earth. He knows them intimately. He knows the number of hairs on their heads. He knows what each one will say before they say it. He is present everywhere, and he's involved at even the most minute level. He creates human life. He presides over every dimension of it. Every thought, action, and word is like an open book to our God. And I believe Psalm 139 is David's personal testimony about theological truths that we refer to sometimes as omniscience, omnipotence, omnipresence, and holiness. He certainly did not refer to them as such, but when you read this psalm, there is no doubt that for David, these were dynamic truths. They were a reality that deeply impacted his life and his relationship with God. And that's my hope for us for this summer, this short series that will become more and more familiar with the majesty of our God. And that as we do, we will be driven to a deeper and deeper intimacy of relationship with him. And I hope, could I ask, that you might consider reading Psalm 139 every day. Every day, 24 verses. Every day. We're going to start with that this morning, by the way. Read Psalm 139 every day. And as you read it, listen. Listen for what God might be speaking into your life through his word about himself, about you, about your relationship with him. And what I would enjoy, can't promise, but I would do my best, is if in your reading something jumps out at you, question, a challenge, something that just blesses you, and you want to share that, and you get it to me early enough in the week, I'll work at weaving those things into my sermon. And I'll give you credit for it if you would like to have credit for it. If you'd like to remain anonymous, we can do that too. But it would be fun to make this sermon prep a bit more interactive, and I would welcome that from you if you would be interested. If that's an incentive to perhaps have you read a little bit and read more closely and listen. I think my greatest desire is that we, and I really do mean we, you and me, that we will be people who get over our fear in life. There's so much to be afraid of. And don't we live there sometimes without even knowing it? You know, man, why am I so stressed today? Why am I feeling so down today? Why am I so overwhelmed today? And oftentimes, if we are really truthful and we're honest, we realize that we're worried about something. Because there's a lot to worry about. There's a lot to be fearful about. There's a lot to be concerned about. It strikes at the heart of every human being. And I believe that that's why there are more commands in Scripture than any other command about not being afraid. Do not fear. Don't be afraid. Over and over and over again, it's almost like it's important to God. Don't be afraid. Fear not. To which my response is, well, yeah, it's easy for you to say. But that's why he says it. Because he is who he is. And Psalm 139 reminds us that he is a God who is intimately involved in our lives. Never once is he surprised by the circumstances. Never once is he shocked. Never once does he, oh man, I blew that one. No. All the fears, all the concerns, all the things that strike that sense of uneasiness in us, all of those things are under his purview over our lives. Man, what would it be like to be people who could live without fear of anything? We wouldn't even have to be fearful of being fearful. But I think perhaps the reality is that maybe we always battle fear because we live in a fallen world, and we've certainly talked about our sin nature not being dead and gone, but we are no longer obligated to it. We are no longer slaves to it. That was Pauline language. So if we are listening to the Spirit of God as he speaks through his word and into our lives and through his people with whom we are in community, if we listen, maybe we're reminded, oh yeah, I am walking down that fear path a little bit. Don't need to. God is my God. He is my provider. He is my caregiver. He is attentive to the details of my life. Even though there are billions and billions of stars and galaxies, how does he do that? Well, it's what he does. It's who he is. And it's what he calls us to. The God of Psalm 139, David's God, he's our God. He is our permanent home. He is our forever home. He's the God with whom we can be who we are without fear of rejection. He's never going to show up at our door with a trash bag and say, pack your stuff, move on. He doesn't tire of us. That one blows me away. How does he not tire of me? I am such a pain in the neck sometimes. Or as my friends in Maine say, oh no, a little lower down. A little lower down. How does he not need a break from us? Well, because we learned in Romans 8, it's because he is love. And when God sets his love upon those with whom he knows, and he knows us, he loves us thoroughly. There's no surprises. Can you imagine? Can you imagine not living in fear of others and what they might think of you? I do that every day. I look in the mirror. Jeez, I need a haircut. I mean, I really do need a haircut. And I came to church this morning thinking, you know, I wonder if people are going to think I look stupid. I need a haircut. Who the heck cares? That's not my problem. Well, I mean, yeah, the problem is I need to get to the barber. But what you think of me is not my problem. Can you imagine how different our lives would be if we really began to get a hold of this do not fear? Our search for security would be over. It's at the heart of every human being. What do those foster kids want more than anything else? They want permanence and security. What do we want more than anything else? We want security and permanence. We want to know that we're taken care of. We want to know that our needs are met. We want to know that there's not going to be some authoritative decision made that moves me from where I am because we live lives under the ultimate authority and nobody does anything without his permission. So everything is his. I love what Mike Iaconelli wrote some years ago in his book called Messy Spirituality. Got just a two or three quotes here that I want to share with you. And then I want us to read Psalm 139. I'll tell you where we're going with that in just a minute. Iaconelli writes, spirituality is not a formula. You ever talk to somebody who says, oh yeah, I'm spiritual? I find myself thinking, I wonder what that looks like. Yeah, I'm spiritual. Spirituality is not a formula. It is not a test. Says Iaconelli, it is a relationship. Spirituality is not about competency. God is not impressed with our abilities. He's not impressed with our performance. He's the one who gave us the abilities. The one that gives us the strength to do the things that we do. Spirituality is about intimacy. Spirituality is not about perfection. It is about connection. The way of the spiritual life begins where we are now in the mess of our lives. Accepting the reality of our broken, flawed lives is the beginning of spirituality. Not because the spiritual life will remove our flaws, but because we let go of seeking perfection, and I would say living fearfully, and instead we seek God, the one who is present in the tangledness of our lives. Spirituality is not about being fixed. It is about God's being present in the mess of our unfixedness. That is Psalm 139. Madeline Engel, in her work, A Stone for a Pillow, writes, when we visualize God as being up in heaven and heaven as being apart from earth, we lose the immediacy of God as part of the story, part of our being, as intimate as was the angel who wrestled all night with Jacob and changed his story forever. God was not something apart from creation or apart from daily life. God was there, marvelously, terribly there. And I like what Peter Marshall says about the intimacy of God. If God does not enter your kitchen, there is something wrong with your kitchen. If you can't take God into your recreation, well, there's something wrong with your play. We all believe in the God of the heroic. What we need most these days is the God of the humdrum, the commonplace, the everyday. And I think that even though he wrote that 4 or 5 decades ago, he may be right. That we all believe in the big possibilities of God. We all believe in the grandiose work of God. But do we believe that God is intimate and close enough to actually speak into our hearts and to prompt change and to prompt courage, to prompt reaching out when we would much rather withdraw, to prompt stepping out when we'd rather stay safe, be it relationship or an event where there might be others there with whom I am uncomfortable. God speaks into the small areas of daily life. Psalm 139 is a good reminder of what theologians call the transcendence and immanence of God. He is big and vast and great beyond our imaginations, and yet he's intimately involved in every breath we take. And if we really begin to take that truth into our hearts, that place where we live with the emotions of daily life and all that it throws at us, I think we will begin to find our fears shrinking. We will begin to become more and more the people who live confidently with their God. Remember all those commands in Scripture. Don't be afraid. Don't fear. Based on the character and the power and the presence of who God is. Now, if these things aren't true, then by all means, live in fear. There's good reason for it. Yeah, if these aren't true, then go for it, man. I mean, I'll lead the way. But if what David says about God is true and what he reveals to us about himself in all of Scripture and in his Son, then we have nothing to fear, and that's where we want to get to. So this morning we're going to read all of Psalm 139, and we're going to use it as our preparation for communion. Talk about something that just screams intimacy, something that just screams, you're on my team, something that just screams, I chose you because I love you, not because you're such a great player, such a great contributor, such a scholar, such a talented individual. I chose you because I love you. So we're going to read Psalm 139 and read it in a way that I hope you'll read it on a daily basis. We're going to read it in chunks this morning. We're going to stay seated this morning because you'd be up and down, up and down. But as we read, listen to what the psalmist is saying through inspiration of the Spirit of God. And to be quite honest with you, I don't think that David necessarily knew that God was inspiring him to write a book that would be included in a worship manual that would be read for millennia by God's people. I think David was just David. And he was living his life as best he could in relationship to this God who had called he and his people out of darkness and into relationship with him. And so there's a realness and a rawness about David, especially when we get to the point where you'll think that maybe he has had a psychic break, and that is coming. But let's start together. Can we put our first slide up? There we go. Thanks, Ashlyn. The all-knowing God, we would call that omniscient, okay? The all-knowing God, these are the first 6 verses. So listen as we read. Listen as we read. Here we go. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before. and you lay your hand upon me, such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Okay. What did you hear? What did you hear about God's knowledge? He knows all things. He knows all things. What does he know about you? Oh, individual. What does he know about you? Everything. Boy, isn't that a bummer? And he knows what I'm thinking. The things that I don't want to tell him because I'm afraid he'll find out. Really? Really, guy? Sharon? His knowledge, the details, the love, the presence in our lives. So as you read through Psalm 139 in the days and weeks to come, let the Spirit bring to life some of those words and those truths, perhaps in ways that you've not considered before. As the psalmist says, let such knowledge be just too wonderful for us. Let it just overwhelm us. May we just not be able to attain and wrap our heads around the knowledge of God. Okay, the omnipresent or all-present God. Here we go. Where can I go from your Spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? By the way, have you ever wished you could get away from God? Good luck with that. I don't know if that's what David had in mind, but my suspicion is, knowing some of the things that David did in his life that he wishes weren't a part of the record, he might have been thinking, oh, where can I go? All right, I'm sorry, let's do that again. Where can I go from your Spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. What did you hear about the all-present God? Can't run. Can't hide. Carolyn? That's a good question. Maybe cover us over? I like that. I like that. You know, and I'm glad you asked that, because what we'll try to do along the way is unpack some of the phrases that the psalmist uses that kind of strike us as maybe a little different. What's he referring to there? I think there's some ancient culture that plays in, of course, to the things that he says, because that was his life. The all-present God. There is nowhere that we can go even if we wanted to. There's nowhere that we go even if we don't want to. He is there for us. Anything else about the all-present God? We'll do more with it. Lee? He sees everything. Yeah. No darkness. Even when we wish it would cover us up. Yeah. Okay, how about our next set? The all-powerful God. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. What do you hear there? What strikes you about those words? Created us, knows everything. Everything. Yeah. Mark. Yes. Yes. No mistakes. I love that. Thank you. Yeah. Jim. Yeah. Yeah. And God's thoughts. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. To be in relationship that is intimate, that we begin to grow an understanding of God's thoughts, what he's thinking, and how he is at work. Yeah. Lee. Yes, all things created by him and for him, and in him all things hold together. Yeah. Amazing. Sue? Say again. Yes, yes. And what is one of our greatest fears? Dying. I mean, who wants to, right? We won't die until, from a strictly human, helpless perspective, it is. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, good stuff. Okay. When you read, listen. Listen for what you're hearing in the words. Okay, here we come to David's psychic break. So let's read it together. It's not really. Here we go. If only God would slay the wicked away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord, and abhor those who are in rebellion against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Wow. Little imprecation there. It almost sounds like some of the imprecatory psalms. Get them, God, get them. All of these things that David writes are without the knowledge of Jesus, without the revelation that the writer of Hebrews tells us, the final revelation, the clearest revelation of the character of God. So that, how do we understand some of these things that David is saying? Well, I think he means what he says. But I also think that we have that attitude tempered by the character and the call of Christ upon our lives, but never, never do we want to see the holiness of God spurned or compromised or belittled, if you will. And for David, that was primary in his life. And yet, wouldn't we all agree that there were times when he really screwed up and was as bad in his actions as those that he felt were bad and evil and apart from God. So we will do more with that when it comes. But those last words, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Now, David, what about those previous things that you just wrote there? Maybe? Is that open for discussion? So we'll talk more. Thank you for making some observations and for just walking through. Again, try to read it every day. Read it every day we're probably going to be in this for 4 or 5 weeks or so. Read it every day and listen for what you might be hearing. Feel free to read other sources and commentaries. See what others say and feel free to interact with me. And if you send stuff to me early enough, maybe I can work it in. I will try. But I think it'll be a fun time of growing in our intimacy. And I'm just so convinced, as I've said way too many times already this morning, that we fear because we don't really live in intimacy with God. And I don't know that fear ever really goes away, but it certainly has less and less control in our lives. The larger and more personally intimate our God becomes at the same time in our lives. How's that for a communion introduction? Did God become more personally involved in the work of his Son, Jesus? You know, Jesus invited people into relationship with himself because he wanted them to be in relationship with God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.